This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. A lot in the news today. An act of domestic terrorism in South Carolina. Of course, the Fox News hosts responded to this murder of 9 African-Americans in a historic African-American church, including a state senator who is also the pastor of the church, by saying, wondering if by calling it a hate crime, this is part of a war on Christians, and calling for more guns. We need more guns to protect us, right? This is brilliant. Senator Sanders will be with us, hopefully, in a few moments. My understanding, Senator, are you there? No, he's not there yet. Okay, so we're waiting for Bernie to show up over at the Senate recording studio. And the Pope has issued an encyclical on climate change. This is like the next to the top level posture that a Pope can take. I guess the highest one is when he sits in the chair and speaks in the voice of God or something. And not being a Catholic, I'm probably mangling that, but it's a remarkable document. And as we speak, the House of Representatives is voting on fast track. As we speak. Right? They have picked, you know, I was predicting that they were going to do it on July 4th. You know, they extended this thing till July 30th so that they could do it and that they, you know, and that they would be looking for a time when Americans wouldn't notice. But they're doing it right now. Senator Sanders is with us. Senator?
Good to be with you, Tom. Sorry I'm late.
That's quite all right. Welcome, and thank you so much for being with us. This is our brunch with Bernie a day early because Senator Sanders' schedule has gotten kind of crazy, and you're only able to be with us for a half hour. Do I understand that correctly?
Perhaps a little bit longer than that, Tom, but not terribly long.
Okay.
We've got a busy day today.
Yeah, I absolutely understand. Just feel free to let me know whenever you need to go. And so we'll start out with
your thoughts.
Well,
let me begin, Tom, by expressing what I believe are the views of virtually everybody in America about these horrific shootings that took place last night in a Charleston church. And what it tells us is that the ugly stain of racism still taints our nation. I think it fills all of us with outrage, disgust, and a deep, deep sadness. The hateful killing of 9 people praying inside a church is a horrific reminder that while we have made significant progress in advancing civil rights in this country, we are still far away from eradicating racism, and our thoughts and prayers are with the families and their congregation. So I did want to say that as we begin the program.
Yeah. And
this is a busy week. As you've indicated, this fast-track legislation is back on the floor of the House now. This legislation, which will enable the president to go forward with one more disastrous trade agreement on top of many others like NAFTA, CAFTA, permanent normal trade relations with China, which have cost us millions of decent-paying jobs, has got to be defeated. And I will work with every union in the country, which is in opposition to this legislation, virtually every major environmental group in this country, which is in opposition to this legislation, and many, many religious groups who know how bad this legislation is. This bill is supported by virtually every major corporation in America. They love unfettered free trade because it enables them to shut down plants in America and send our jobs abroad and pay people pennies an hour in low-wage countries and then bring those products back into America. It's very much supported by the pharmaceutical industry, which will be able to raise prices for medicine in poor countries around the world. So there are a million reasons to be in opposition to this. Over the last number of weeks on the program, we've discussed many of them. But I will do everything that I can to see that this legislation does not become law. Trade is a good thing, but we need trade policies which create decent-paying jobs in the United States, which help us expand the middle class, not trade policies which cost us jobs and lead us to a race to the bottom with lower wages. So that's an issue we are going to stay on. Let me mention my pleasure in seeing Pope Francis showing a great deal of courage in standing up for science and issuing an encyclical which makes it clear to leaders throughout the world that climate change is real. It is already causing devastating problems, and often those problems impact the lowest income people around the world, and that this is an issue that cannot be swept under the rug, that it is not good enough for here in the Congress for Republicans to tell us they are not scientists. Well, they may not be scientists, but the scientists who are scientists, the people who have studied this issue most thoroughly, understand almost unanimously that climate change is real and caused by human activity and carbon emissions. So I applaud the Pope for standing with many of us around the world who are determined to do everything that we can to transform our energy system away from fossil fuel and into energy efficiency and such sustainable energies as wind, solar, geothermal, and biomass. Just one other issue out there, Tom. Yesterday, I was on the floor talking about a recent Government Accountability Office study, which talked about hunger within the senior community. And the fact of the matter is that nearly 4 million low-income seniors, that's more than one in five, do not know and are not secure about knowing where their next meal is coming from. So there's a mythology, the mythology out there pushed by big money interests and conservative politicians is that, well, you know, seniors are pretty well off, and that's why we can cut Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. Not a problem. And the answer is absolutely not. Poverty among seniors is growing. There are seniors living on incomes, Tom, that I do not have any idea how they can survive. We're talking about $8,000, $9,000 a year. You know, these are folks who, everything being equal because they're older, need to need medicine, more medicine than younger people. They need to keep their homes warmer in the wintertime. And they are having today to make the choice between feeding themselves adequately or providing medicine or heating their homes. And that is not what this country is about. And let me just remind everybody, and it's easy to forget, we live in the wealthiest country today in the history of the world. And yet very few people feel that, understand that, because we also are living in a nation where the vast majority of that wealth rests in the hands of very, very few people. So this is not like we are a poor country and we have to sit down and say, oh, it's just too bad, we're poor, our kids can't get an adequate education, we're poor, we can't feed the hungry, we can't house people who have no homes, we're just so poor. That is not America. This is a country in which there is extraordinary wealth, where workers today are producing far more because of an exploding technology. But our problem is that 99% of all new income is going to the top 1%, and the top 0.1% owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%. One family, the Walton family, owns more wealth than the bottom 42% of the American people. So what this debate is about, what is going on here in Congress, is whether or not we have a society and an economy that works for all of our people. Today, I just was late, Tom, because I came from a press event with maybe 100, 200, I don't know, Teamsters and other working people who are trying to fight back against pension cuts. They worked their whole lives, and now they're looking at the possibility of major cuts in their pensions. This is going on in almost every aspect of our lives.
Amazing. We'll pick up phone calls right after the break, Senator.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Okay. We'll be right back with Senator Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour, or actually a little less than an hour here today, but on Thursday. We are live right now, and we'll be back with your calls for Senator Sanders right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And Senator Sanders' Senate website is sanders.senate.gov. You can sign up for his newsletter, the Bernie Buzz, there. There's all kinds of great news. Check it out. Welcome back. Senator, you're still with us, right?
I am right here, Tom.
Okay, let's pick up the phone calls here. Sydney in Pollock, Louisiana. You are on the air watching us on Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, sir. Mr. Sanders, in Alexandria, Louisiana, the Veterans Hospital has been reduced to a walk-in clinic with no emergency room. They don't perform operations anymore. And I was told that the doctor's salaries are no longer keeping up with the private sector, and the VA hospitals can't get doctors because of this. Do you know anything about it?
Well, I do know something about it because I was the former chairman of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee. Sydney, what we did just about a year ago is to put over $5 billion into the VA so that they can hire more doctors, more nurses, more medical personnel, and eliminate some of the very long waiting times that exist around this country. We're going to make certain that the VA spends that money effectively. There are many places around the country where the VA is understaffed and people are waiting too long to get into the facility. So the answer to your question, Sydney, is I don't know about the particular case in Louisiana, but I do know that that we are trying to strengthen the VA and give them the resources they need so that every veteran who walks into the VA gets quality care in a timely manner.
Steve, watching Free Speech TV in Ridgefield, Connecticut. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. How are you?
I'm good.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Great.
Big fan of both of you guys. So I have a kind of a statement with a question at the end. I have been an independent voter my entire life, and I am going to become a Democratic voter primarily to endorse you and vote for you in the primary, and also to oppose Jim Himes because of his stance on the TPA and the TAA and the TPP. So my question is, I'm curious, have you been getting a lot of phone calls about people taking stances in that way? And then another quick question is, did you like the free endorsement from Neil Young after Donald Trump stole his song?
Well, I did. I very much appreciate Neil Young's endorsement. He's certainly one of the great entertainers in our country, and I appreciate that. We are, Steve, getting many calls. And have been for a number of weeks and months in opposition to Fast Track and the TPP. And as I mentioned earlier, I think the American people understand that when we have an agreement pushed by corporate America, Wall Street, and the drug companies, you should be pretty suspicious about what that trade agreement does. And what it does is continues the process by which companies can outsource our jobs to low-wage countries. It also includes provisions for an investor-state dispute approach, which basically says that if a government, local, state, federal, national government, is trying to protect the interest of its people, say in healthcare or in environmental protection, that future corporate profits can override those decisions made by democratically elected governments, which to me is beyond comprehension.
Yeah. We'll be back with more of your questions for Senator Sanders right after this. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our brunch with Bernie, a little less than an hour, a day early. And, Senator, we'll pick up more calls here.
Let's do it, Tom.
Okay, Marcia in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Marcia, please keep it short. We have a lot of people and very little time.
Hi. I called my state representative, Diane Black. I called her yesterday to find out how she voted on TAA, and the person who answered proceeded to give me some explanation of the TPP, and I'm like, no, I want to know how she voted on the TAA. We went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth, and finally she said, well, she voted against it. I don't believe it. I know that Diane Black has been out there pumping up the TPP. I was lied to by her office.
So your question, Marcia?
my question, what do I do about it? How do I?
Well, for a start, Marcia, I mean, this is a vote you can't hide from. It's, you either vote for it or you vote against it, and it's right there on the official record. Just go to the your computer.
Thomas.gov, isn't it?
Yeah, Thomas, and you'll find every vote that is cast, every member's vote is listed. It's something that nobody can run away from. It's there in public.
Okay. Dennis in Alexandria, Virginia, listening on Sirius. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. This is Dennis. Good luck in your quest for the presidency. My question is, why can't a law be made to imprison CEOs? There's a threat of greed that's gone through our history. And all they do is pass the fines along for their illegal activities to the shareholders, and not one of them ever go to jail for anything. So there's no incentive for them to stop doing what they've been doing forever.
You're talking about companies that plead guilty to felonies. Thank you, Dennis.
Well, I think Dennis raises a good point. I'm not sure that no CEOs have gone to jail, but relatively few do. I think, for example, time after time we are seeing one or another or a group of large financial institutions pleading guilty to fraud and being fined billions and billions of dollars collectively, not to mention the illegal activities that took place that drove this country into the worst recession in modern history when Wall Street collapsed. Do I think there was illegal behavior? I do. Do I think that people who commit illegal behavior, which results in millions of people losing their jobs and their life savings and their homes and devastating the entire country, deserve to be punished? Yeah, I do. But I think we live in a culture, Dennis, which is fairly pathetic, which says that the wealthy and the powerful and all of their money and all of their lawyers can avoid imprisonment. And yet if you are some kid doing some minor criminal activity, you can end up in jail. That's the nature of our society today. And that's the nature of our criminal justice system. And obviously that has got to change. And that's something we have got to work on. Justice should be applied to all people, regardless of their status in our society.
Drew in Olathe, Kansas. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Olathe, actually. But
Olathe. Thank you.
Senator Sanders, Tom Hartman. First, Senator Sanders, I can't wait for you to come down here to Kansas and campaign. But my question is, why, between the years and the gap of NAFTA and TPP, have we not seen any small organizations, small businesses, Amnesty International, all these other organizations come together and draft a grassroots bill as an alternative to this free trade agreement?
As fair trade instead of free trade, you mean?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and Tom, you can help me out on this. I mean, I think there have been efforts made. I know the unions have come together and other grassroots organizations.
Yeah.
Not only unions, but environmental groups, to say basically that trade is not a bad thing. You know, sometimes I and others are being painted as we're terrible people. We're going to build a wall around America. We don't want to trade. That's nonsense. But what we understand is when you have trade agreements engineered and pushed by large corporations who want to throw American workers out on the street, these are not good trade agreements for our people. And as often as not, they're not good at trade agreements for people in other countries as well. So I think Drew is right. It's not enough to say we dislike and are vigorously opposed to TPP. What we do need are trade agreements that work for the American worker, that work for low-income workers around the world, that work for workers on both sides, but do not just simply work for the large CEOs, for the CEOs of large multinational corporations. And that is something. I think Drew was right. I think we have to be more definitive and start developing legislation and trade agreements that would accomplish those goals.
John in Voorhees, New Jersey. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hello?
Hi, John. Quickly, please.
Yes, I'm just very upset and trying to figure out what I can do. I know the unions are having a hard time with pensions, but also Republican governors are trying to cut teachers' pensions away and everything.
So the question is, what can we do about that?
Well, John, you know, what I talk about is the need for a political revolution. You know, we are being attacked on so many different levels. teachers are being attacked for being greedy and terrible people because they have a decent pension. I just met with workers from the Teamsters and the International Association of Machinists, people who were promised that the salaries, that the wages they gave up, the health care benefits they gave up that went into pensions would be guaranteed. And then they wake up and find that there may be very significant cuts in those pensions. There are efforts today to cut Social Security. I go to budget hearing after budget hearing, the ranking member of the Senate Budget Committee. Republicans are heavy into wanting to cut Social Security. Their presidential candidates are. We're being attacked on numerous fronts. And what we need is to stand together strongly and say enough is enough. The government's got to start working for all of us and not just for wealthy campaign contributors.
Amen. Senator, will you be with us in 6 minutes at the end of the newscast?
I can be with you in 6 minutes, yes.
Okay, great. Stick around. Senator Sanders is with us. It's Brunch with Bernie on Thursday here on the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
And be sure to check out Bernie's website at sanders.senate.gov. He also has a very significant presence over on Facebook. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Our Brunch with Bernie a day early, Thursday, is going on right now. And, Senator, I understand that we can have you until quarter two, about another 10 minutes?
Right. That's exactly right.
Okay, great. Great. So let's pick up some quick phone calls here. Thomas in Sacramento, California. You're on the air with Senator Sanders. Please keep it short.
Yes, I'll make it real quick. It's an honor to speak to both of you guys, and thank you for being a voice for the middle class, Bernie and Tom. Real quickly, is what can be done about the poison pill that the Republicans put into the post office during that lame duck session? And could you also be a voice for the post office workers with all the rest of the laborers?
Thomas, I have been working a very long time, and I think if you talk to the major unions, they will tell you that I've been one of the leaders in trying to fight against efforts to essentially dismember and destroy the United States Postal Service. We beat back an effort some years ago that would have required, as I recall, shutting down something like 15,000 rural post offices in America. Right now, we are working hard and had some success in putting back a proposal which should have shut down some 82 processing plants all over this country. We came very close at the end of last session to get a moratorium on the slowing down of mail delivery standards. It used to be overnight. Now it is much slower than that. People all over the country are now perceiving correctly that their mail is being delivered slower than it used to be, and I want to change that. I think the poison pill that I believe that Thomas is referring to is the fact that every single year, uniquely of any government agency or any entity in the United States, private or public, Postal Service has to come up with $5.5 billion for future health, future retiree health benefits. And that is just an incredible burden and just not something the Postal Service should have to do. So, yes, Thomas, we are working very hard on this issue. I believe in a strong Postal Service, and we're going to work with the unions to make that happen.
Senator, just FYI, the fast-track TPA just passed the House of Representatives by one vote with 28 Democratic votes. Don't know if you want to comment on that, or should we just go to the next
obviously,
question?
Obviously, that is something I'm not happy to hear. It will now come back to the Senate. And the issue in the Senate is whether members will vote for those Democrats who voted for the TP, voted for Fast Track, whether or not they will vote for Fast Track if it doesn't have trade adjustment assistance. We hope they will not. We hope that we can keep this legislation from getting 60 votes, and we will do everything that we can to make sure that Fast Track is not.
So passed. Now it's time for us to call our senators again.
Now you're back to the Senate again.
There you go. So, okay, thank you. Thank you for clarifying that.
The issue here is you have Democratic senators who voted for Fast Track, who voted for it because they said that the trade adjustment assistance was in it. Right now, the trade adjustment assistance is not in it. Will they keep their word, or will they vote just simply for the fast track.
Josh in Syracuse, New York, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thanks, Senator Sanders. I'm hoping for the best for the future, hoping for you to win no matter what. My question is, infrastructure is going to be a must-have for the future. So are you willing to provide tax credits to those companies that use sustainable methods and renewable resources for the rebuilding of our country and taxing those that don't?
Absolutely. Josh, well, it's not just infrastructure generally we refer to as roads and bridges and water systems. I think you're talking about energy issues. And I have co-authored legislation, which is the most comprehensive climate change legislation ever offered. And what that legislation would do is impose a tax on carbon, because we have to move away from carbon and fossil fuel, and we have to move to energy efficiency and sustainable energy. I have introduced legislation and support legislation that provides subsidies to those companies who are producing wind, solar, geothermal, and other sustainable energies. It's extremely important that we move in that direction.
Stephanie in Kankakee, Illinois. You're on the air with Senator Sanders, and please keep it short. Stephanie? No Stephanie. Penny in Sedalia, Missouri. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hey, good morning. It's an honor to speak with you, Senator. I fully support your candidacy for president. I was sorry to hear that the House just passed the TPA. But my question is, are you ever going to come to Missouri?
The answer is we are going to go to as many states in this country as we possibly can, Penny. And the reason for that is that, yes, it's very important to have a strong presence in the early primary and caucus states in Iowa and New Hampshire, in South Carolina and Nevada. But I believe that there are states in this country, in the South and elsewhere, that have not heard progressive voices. And I believe that there are thousands and thousands of progressives who want to come together and figure out how they can become active in the political process. So to answer your question, I will do everything that I can to make sure that Missouri and other southern states are on our schedule.
Bruce in Atlanta, Georgia. You're on the air with Senator Sanders. Please keep it short. Bruce? No, Bruce. Bruce is on line 10. That's the one I think we've been having trouble with. Omar in Calabasas, California. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good morning. Senator, why don't you make 1% Wall Street sales tax on both Wall Street and LaSalle Street, meaning derivatives will be charged as well, a 1% tax on them instead of whining about, you know, the rich, the 70%, which kind of they want to make you look like a person who's against successful people, a 1% tax.
Well, I am not whining. What I do is talk about facts, and we're introducing, you know, are working right now on a comprehensive tax bill. But, Omar, what I will tell you is we have already introduced a Wall Street speculation tax, which I think covers the issue that you are talking about. And it will have the benefit of bringing in a very substantial sum of money and also have the additional effect of dampening speculation on Wall Street, which is something that should be done. So I think, Omar, to answer your question, I think we have already introduced that legislation.
Daniel in Hinsdale, Illinois. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes, and quick to the question. Senator, would you agree to characterize the situation of the Palestinians as apartheid? And as President of the United States, would you do anything different than what has been the U.S. policy of seemingly unrestricted absolute support for Israel, no matter what it does?
I think, Daniel, that we need an even-handed policy in the Middle East, which has not been the case. I think Israel is entitled to live in peace and security. I think the Palestinians are entitled to a state of their own. I think that the United States should be supportive of helping to establish an economy there, which is strong. Today it is a disaster. And I think, to answer your question, that the United States should play an even-handed role in dealing with both groups.
Mariana in Pomona, California. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm not sure how familiar you are with the field of evaluation, but it is the International Year of Evaluation. So I wanted to know, Senator Sanders, can you please share your perspective on the importance of accountability and assigning value to our political process, which is the basis of evaluation theory?
Marianne, you have to take that another sentence further, because I don't know that I am familiar with what you are talking about.
Okay, so evaluation is looking at how effective something's working and making sure that we're accountable to that. So I was just wondering what you thought,
sure.
How important it is for that to be in our.
Well, of course,
process.
I was a mayor for 8 years, and it goes without saying that you want to establish policies that work effectively, that solve the problems you want to solve and are done in a cost-effective manner. And I think one of the principles that many mayors, especially governors as well, try to work on is what we call best practices. And that means if an idea is generated in Nevada or in South Dakota that makes sense, people in Vermont should steal that idea and vice versa. But you certainly want to look at the data. You want to make sure that programs are working the way they were designed to work and that they're working cost-effectively.
Senator, we have just 1 minute left till you have to go. Final thoughts?
Well, the final thoughts are, and I think I was asked earlier in the show about what we do about the various problems facing our country. And in 30 seconds, I think the answer is pretty simple, and that is that we need a political revolution in this country, by which I mean political consciousness is changed, that people become far more active in politics and start electing people and who are going to be representing the vast majority of our people, who are middle class and working families, and that at the same time we're going to take on boldly those candidates who are sponsored by a billionaire class, who get all of their money for campaigns from the very wealthy and are doing the business of the very wealthy. That's the kind of political revolution that we need, Tom. And when we do that, I think there's very little that we as a country can't accomplish.
Thank you. So I so agree. Thank you so much, Senator Sanders, for being with us this week.
Thank you, Tom. Take care.
I wish you the very best. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And check out Bernie's website, Sanders.Senate.gov. And he's on Facebook. He also has a campaign page, which is BernieSanders.com. Welcome back. Bernie is no longer with us, but I'll take calls and we'll see what happens. Larry in Covington, Georgia. Sorry you're stuck with me, but what's up?
That's okay, Tom. I appreciate you taking my call. And the only thing I was wanting to ask President Sanders was I learned the last election, all the races were close, and then all of a sudden at the end, Republicans win by landslides. And I heard from some programs that I listened to that we're using Republican machine, voting machines.
Well, we're using voting machines that are made by companies that historically have been owned and run by Republicans. Yeah, ES&S, for example,
man,
one of the early presidents was Chuck Hagel, the Republican senator. Diebold, Wally O'Dell, I recall, if I'm recalling right, was his name. He famously wrote a letter saying he was going to bring in Ohio for George W. Bush in 2004 and, apparently did. So, yeah. And we still have those machines and in some places like Georgia, where you live, I don't believe that the machines even produce a paper trail any longer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can we do anything, Tom?
Damn good question, Larry. Just let your elected representatives know and just stay on it. Larry, I got to move along. Thank you very much for the call. Bill in Hampton Bays, New York, watching on Free Speech TV on the website. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Yeah, I called my Board of Elections. I've been an independent all my life, and I just wanted to change my affiliation to vote for Bernie Sanders. I was told that I could do that, but it won't take effect until after the next general election in November. So if anybody wants to vote for him in a primary when it comes around next year, and they don't do it now in New York, and I don't know any other states that are the same, they won't be able to vote in the primary to get him in.
So the deadline is between now and November of this year, or between?
Yes, between now and November of this year, because they said for the next general election in November.
Right, okay. So
even though the websites say that you have 20 days or 25 days, it'll change. If you're changing, that's only if you're a new register. If you're changing your registration, it does not take effect. Like, even though I did it now, it's not going to take effect until this November. If I waited till next November, like after that general election, say in December, January, it's not going to be able to vote in any of the primaries though till the next general election.
Wow. Okay. Thank you for that heads up, Bill. That's fascinating. Appreciate the call. We got 45 seconds. Bruce, you got a quick one here, Bruce, in Atlanta?
Possibly. Yeah, the question for Senator Sanders was, I'm confused. How can we, the United States, be both the most productive than any other time in history, and at the same time losing thousands and thousands of jobs overseas? How is that possible?
It's because of our insane trade policies. This started with Richard Nixon and, went on steroids in the Reagan administration. Bill Clinton, really amped it up with NAFTA, and then we got CAFTA, and now we're looking at SHAFTA. It's the trade policies, Bruce. And what they have done is they have loosened the American labor market to the point that employers have been able to suppress wages because they've shipped our factories overseas. We are closing 14 factories a day in the United States right now. Yesterday, 14 factories closed. Today, 14 factories will close. That's the average right now, 14 factories a day. We've lost 60,000 factories since 2000. You do the math. We'll be back. Welcome back, Tom Hartman, with you. Senator Sanders has had to move on. He's getting very, very busy, as you can imagine. It's like, they book a hall in Denver, and they've got to book a much larger hall now because too many people signed up. They booked a hall in Minneapolis. They had to get a bigger hall. They booked a hall in Los Angeles. They got to get bigger. It's amazing. I mean, he's just being overweight. Bernie Mentum is growing across the country. I'm just astonished by it. I want to get back to where Senator Sanders opened this first hour, and talk about this a little bit. He didn't use the word terrorism. I will. He started out by talking about this shooting, this 21-year-old whose middle name is Storm, which makes me wonder if his parents are white supremacists. Stormfront.org is the biggest white supremacist website in the United States, maybe in the world, I don't know, but it's huge. And he's got a Facebook picture of him wearing a jacket with a patch, with a couple of patches on it. One is the flag of Rhodesia, where they used to, white Rhodesia when Ian Smith was running it, it's now Zimbabwe, but before that it was apartheid white Rhodesia. And they killed black people with rat poison. And the other is the flag of South Africa before it became an integrated state, when it was still apartheid South Africa. And I get it that the federal government is calling this a hate crime. But this kid said to one of the people who he spared, who he did not kill, he said, You are raping our women. He's the white kid speaking to a black woman. You are raping our women. You are taking over our country, and you've got to go. I'm doing this from memory, but I'm pretty sure it's a verbatim quote. And in fact, we have a clip of her saying that, don't we? Yeah, let's just listen to her.
He just said, "I have to do it." He said, "You rape our women, and you're taking over our country. And you have to go."
That was Sylvia Johnson. She's a cousin of Pastor Clementa C. Pinckney, who was murdered. He was the pastor of the church. He was a prodigy. He was a pastor at 13. He ran for the state senate at 23. He was a genius, and he's dead because he was black. Because this, and now the Justice Department is calling this a hate crime, or they're investigating it as a hate crime. I think we should be calling this domestic terrorism. Terrorism is when you kill civilians in order to frighten other civilians of a particular type or group. In other words, this act is not committed just against these nine people. It is intended to be publicized so that everybody gets it, that everybody's at risk. And if this is not domestic terrorism, I don't know what is. And I realize over at Fox News, they're, you know, in Fox and Friends this morning, you can read about this at MediaMatters.org. In fact, they've got the clips. They're saying, well, why are they even calling this a hate crime? Is this part of the war on Christians? Honest to God. And, you know, we need more guns, you know, to protect ourselves from crazy people like this. Well, he wasn't crazy. He was a terrorist. He is a terrorist. They've captured him now. And I think it's time to start calling this terrorism. I think that you know, what was done to Eric Garner was terrorism. I think what was done, you know, I think the shooting after shooting after shooting of unarmed black, mostly men, by mostly white cops in the United States, I think that is domestic terrorism, or at least many of those instances, because what they're saying is to essentially the entire black community in that neighborhood, we can kill and get away with it. You better look out. Let's start talking about terrorism in a real way. ISIS represents virtually no threat to us at all. I mean, the best they might be able to do, let's say they could take out an airplane or something. We are losing so many people. We are losing so much potential. People dying prematurely. People not being able to get the health care they need. People not being able to get jobs because of institutional racism in this country. It is a form of terrorism. And this is the tip of the iceberg. Underneath this tip of this kid who murdered Reverend Pinckney, underneath the tip of that is this giant underwater iceberg of institutional racism in the United States, which for 400 years in this country has been enforced by terror. And is continuing to be enforced by terror. And it's time for somebody to stand up and call it what it is. It's terrorism. Anyhow, if you have thoughts you want to share on that, feel free. We're going to have an interesting day today. The Monsanto Protection Act just got worse. It's called the DARK Act, D-A-R-K. This is going to be voted on tomorrow. And it's going to make it illegal for state or local governments to ban genetically modified crops. So another thing to call Congress about. The TPA, which is Fast Track Authority, just passed the House of Representatives with 28 Democratic votes. When we get that vote list, I will share it with you. It'll probably be a half hour or so. But I'm guessing it's the same 28 people who voted for it last time. And so now it goes back to the Senate. Because it's different from the legislation that the Senate passed, which had this so-called trade adjustment authority attached to it, which meant, you know, we're going to take $700 million out of Medicare and use that to pay for re-educating all the Americans who are going to lose their jobs because of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Well, that's no longer in there. Now it's just fast track with nothing for the workers who are going to lose their jobs. And will those Democrats, Ron Wyden and his friends in the U.S. Senate, will the Democrats in the U.S. Senate, I think it was 13 of them last time, Patty Murray, I don't have the list in front of me, so Maria Cantwell, I know the Pacific Northwest was well represented in this delegation. Will they now vote for fast track without protections for workers? It's going to be very interesting. There's other news as well, the Pope's climate change encyclical. There's just a lot of stuff here. We will be getting to as we King V. Burwell might be coming down soon. We'll get to all the stuff right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back to the second hour of our program. An act of domestic terrorism committed in South Carolina. The 21-year-old white guy who did it is in custody right now. We'll see how this plays out. The feds are looking at it as a hate crime. A hate crime is, I mean, you know, that's what we call terrorism. And I think that we should just use the word terrorism. This is an act of terrorism, number one. Number two, the House of Representatives just passed what they call euphemistically trade promotion authority, what Richard Nixon called when he invented it fast track, for a six-year period. It still has to go back to the Senate now because the $700 million that was attached to it through what was called the Trade Adjustment Assistance, or Assistance Adjustment, or whatever, TAA, was not passed by the House. They couldn't get the Republicans to go along with giving displaced workers free education to get new jobs. The House Republicans would not vote for it. I mean, these are such corporate shills. So now the Senate is confronted with, you know, on the one hand, the 13, as I recall, Democrats in the Senate who voted for this last time are now faced with the choice. Do we vote for it with no protections for workers or not? So we may lose some Senate votes. On the other hand, there were a couple of Republicans who voted against it last time in the Senate, and their objection was the worker protections, the TAA. Well, that's no longer attached. So we may lose a few Democrats in the Senate, but we may pick up a few, or not we, the president and his corporate buddies and the transnational corporations may pick up a few votes in the on the Republican side, lose a few votes on the Democratic side. But if you are concerned about this at all, now is the time to call your senators. You have two. Everybody has two. Call your senators. The switchboard number for Congress is 202-225-3121. Yesterday I told you when Donald Trump announced that he was running for president, and Rachel Maddow last night appears to have outed that there was a cattle call. I get these emails because I'm a SAG-AFTRA member, you know, the Screen Actors Guild. And the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, I think that's what AFTRA stands for. They merged, and so I'm in both. And, I get four or five emails a week because I'm just from the local chapter here in D.C. where they'll say, you know, we're going to be filming a movie and we're looking for extras, or we're looking for, you know, somebody who meets this description, you know, for a TV scene, you know, or whatever, right? It's telling actors that there's an opportunity. It's what the union does. Apparently, a company that just does extras, you know, when you watch a TV show and you see, you know, 100 people in the crowd, or, you know, as you see somebody walking down the street and there's all these people, you know, going up or down the street. Well, those aren't normal people. Those are actually extras. It's a category. It's the bottom of the food chain for actors. And apparently this company put out a call offering $50 for 3 hours if you'd come to Donald Trump's gig. So Donald Trump packed the house with his money.
Yeah.
Okay. But it was very interesting this morning. He was on Morning Joe on Joe Scarborough's show. And he had some things to say that, yesterday I was talking about insiders and outsiders. And I really think that increasingly our elections in America, and I think that even the Tea Party sweep was a demonstration of this, increasingly our elections are becoming less and less about whether it's a Democrat or a Republican, and more about whether they're an insider or an outsider. Right? You get Democrats, you know, like Earl Blumenauer voting for TPP for Fast Track, and I don't know how he voted this time around, but I'm guessing he probably stuck with it. We'll find out. in the next hour or so. That's kind of like, okay, this is an insider, right? Inside with the corporate crowd, inside with the lobbyist crowd, inside with the, you know, the insiders. And then you got the outsiders. And I submit to you that on the left, the ultimate insider is Hillary Clinton, the ultimate outsider is Bernie Sanders. And that's why we're seeing the biggest contrast between the two, because Martin O'Malley and Lincoln Chafee are, you know, they're sort of half insiders, half outsiders, especially Lincoln Chafee, who used to be a Republican, now running for president as a Democrat. But on the right, you could say Ben Carson is an outsider, but, you know, really they're all taking these positions, you know, supporting TPP and all this other kind of thing. They're taking insider positions. They're all fighting for who's the best insider, except Donald Trump. Here's what Donald Trump had to say this morning on Morning Joe, clip number one.
What changes would you make to try and help lift up the middle class in ways that has not been accomplished before, specifically?
The biggest thing we have to do is new trade agreements. China is killing us. Mexico is killing us. Japan is killing us. Everybody is beating us. We have incompetent people negotiating trade. We are losing money at every single step. We don't make good deals anymore.
Give us an example.
And that's why, Joe, I go out to speak. And I think Mark will tell you, although he's only about 70% there, but I think you will say, I get the biggest crowds, I get the biggest ovations, I'm getting very good poll numbers, and nobody until yesterday thought I was running. I mean, it's fun.
Well, actually, that's what he said yesterday, but give us an example of how, because a lot of people believe it right now, especially while we're negotiating the latest trade deal, that the United States always is out negotiated on trade deals. Give me a good specific example of that.
Well, because China and all of these people, Mexico is the new China, by the way. Mexico is unbelievable what they're doing with cars and with industry. They are taking our business like we're a bunch of babies. We don't have our best and our brightest negotiating for us. We have a bunch of losers. We have a bunch of political hacks. We have diplomats. And China puts the people, hey, look, I know the smartest guys on Wall Street. I know our best negotiators. I know the overrated guys, the underrated guys, the guys that nobody ever heard of that are killers, that are great. We got to use those people.
I'm guessing all over America there are Republicans going, huh, really? Clip number two. Here he is again.
Who would be your
I'll
guy?
Give you an example.
Here's your Secretary of Treasury.
Joe, let me give you an example. Carolyn Kennedy. I see 60 Minutes. She goes in, she says to the White House, oh, I'd love a job. Well, would you like to be ambassador to Japan? Really? Wow. She's like a negotiator for us in Japan. It's ridiculous. Japan is doing a number on us with the yen. You know, they just devalued the yen yet again.
Right.
We don't have people that know what's going on.
So again, specifically, who? Give us a name on Wall Street that you might consider as a Secretary of Treasury
negotiator. I'll tell you what. I'd like guys like Jack Welch. I like guys like Henry Kravis. I'd love to bring my friend Carl Icahn. You know, I mean, we have people that are great. We have people that are better than any of their negotiators. We don't use them, Joe.
Yeah.
We use people that are soft and weak and, frankly, stupid and incompetent.
And Carolyn Kennedy, who I've, you know, always thought is a wonderful person, wrote an op-ed in the New York Times last week supporting the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And she's our ambassador to Japan, which, as Donald Trump correctly points out, has been eating our lunch for 30 years. You know, ever since we dropped our tariffs, ever since we said, okay, we are naked to the world. We're not going to use a VAT tax to protect ourselves like Japan does, like Taiwan does, like South Korea does, like all the European countries do. We're not going to use that. We're not going to use tariffs to protect us like China is doing. No, we're just, no problem. Import whatever you want, bring it in, help the Walton family make another few billion dollars so that they can buy some more politicians. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Anyhow, it's also Anything Goes Summer, and I think we're going to have the vote count here shortly. Alan Grayson just released a statement on this. We're trying to see if we can maybe even get him on the program. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And BernieSanders.com is where you can find out all about Bernie's candidacy. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And John on... Oh, hey, hang on, John. Just a second. I just got the vote. Here, this is today's vote. Thank you, Shano. Shane is on it. 218 ayes, 208 noes. This vote passed by 10 votes. Here are the Democrats who voted for fast track without any what's called trade adjustment assistance or TAA, without any help for workers who lose their jobs as a result of these trade treaties. I mean, they're just acknowledging right up front. Every time we sign one of these treaties, millions of Americans lose their jobs. But this time we're going to take $700 million out of Medicare and screw the Medicare recipients and give it to younger people who are working, but they've lost their jobs because of these trade deals. Well, they blew that out. And here are the Dems. So now it's just a straight up or down vote on fast track, whether or not all of these, and not just TPP, but there's several other very toxic trade deals that Michael Froman and his buddies over at the White House and that the Republicans in Congress are working on. Here are the Democrats who voted yes on fast track. Just so you know. Ashford, Barra, Beyer, Blumenauer, Bonamici, Himes, Hinojosa, I think it is. E.B. Johnson, Kilmer, Polis, Quigley, Rice, Schrader, Connolly, Cooper, Costa, Cuellar, Davis, Delaney, DelBene, Farr, Kind, Larson, Meeks, O'Rourke, Peters, Sewell, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz. They're the ones who voted, who's the head of the DNC right now, isn't she? Yes, indeed. Who voted yes on fast track all by itself. Send it back to the Senate. So, you know, I personally, if I lived in the districts of any of these people, I would be calling up my local Democratic Party and saying, I want to join. I want to show up. Tell me when the meetings are. I want to participate. I might even want to become a precinct delegate. And I want to work to get a primary challenger to these Democrats who voted for this. When Bill Clinton pushed NAFTA through Congress, along with the Republicans in 1993, he got 30 Democrats to vote for it. 16 of them lost their seats a year later in 1994. And Newt Gingrich and the Republicans took over the House of Representatives for the first time, with the one exception of a two-year period during the Harry Truman presidency, for the first time since the Great Depression. That's how bad these deals are. So, anyhow, we got that. And John, watching Free Speech TV in Easley, South Carolina. Hey, John, you wanted to talk about the minimum wage?
Yeah, Tom, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you.
Like your program, like you, like everything about your program. Very
Thank
good.
You.
I wanted to ask about the minimum wage. I've heard yourself and other people advocate increases in the minimum wage. Bernie Sanders advocates increases. Excuse me. But I never hear anybody advocate indexing the minimum wage to inflation.
Bernie's legislation that he proposed actually does that.
Huh?
Bernie Sanders proposed legislation that does that. It raises the minimum wage and it indexes it to inflation.
Well, he has proposed.
Oh, yeah.
I've never heard
yeah.
talk about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, John, this raises another interesting – thank you for the call. This raises another interesting question. Clip number three, Shano. Here's Donald Trump this morning on the minimum wage, and let me tell you why he's actually right on this. Here he is.
What's your position on the issue of whether or not to raise the minimum wage?
I would say leave the minimum wage. That's not the problem. Whether somebody's getting an extra, the problem is we have to create jobs.
People can't live on what they're being paid.
The problem is we have to get jobs in the country. The jobs are being taken by Mexico and by China. The jobs are being taken by India. You know, you call up American Express and you talk to somebody on the phone. They have an accent. You say, where are you from? We're talking to them in India. And I say, We can't do that ourselves. We have to bring back jobs.
But don't you think wages are a part of that issue? And, okay, obviously you don't agree with raising the minimum wage.
You can stop that right there. You know, he's basically, here's what Donald Trump is saying. And I remember this time, right? When I was a kid, when I was 16 years old, I was working at a radio station as a DJ for the minimum wage, which I think was like $2.35 an hour back then. My General Motors, right there in Lansing, Michigan, was hiring people at what in today's dollars would be $45 an hour. Now, why was it so high? Why was it not the minimum wage? Because there was competition among employers for workers, because we had factories in the United States and the labor market was tight. And what Donald Trump is saying in an inarticulate way is, if you bring our jobs back home, then the minimum wage becomes much less consequential. It goes back to being what it was when I was 16, which is basically the entry-level wage for 16-year-olds, and instead of having adults working for the minimum wage, because employers will have to compete with each other for workers, because you'll have more job openings than there are workers, which is how it was in the 1960s. It's not how it is now because of these insane trade policies.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Call your senator now, 202-225-3121, and say no to Fast Track, no to TPA. Congressman Alan Grayson just issued this statement. He said, Congress just committed an unpardonable offense against America's workers, the American economy, workers in other nations, our environment, and American sovereignty. We just ceded our ability to ensure that our trade deals actually benefit America. We didn't vote for free trade. We voted for fake trade. We have voted to increase our trade deficit, which in turn will increase our budget deficit. Our trade debt is $11 trillion right now. That's $35,000 for every man, woman, and child in America. We have made it easier for other countries to sell us their goods and then use their profits to buy our assets. We've just paved the way for more deals like NAFTA that hurt our workers and our economy. For the past 14 years, we've had a trade deficit of $500 billion a year, every year, more than $1 billion a day. And then he goes on to say, despite the outcome, I want to thank the thousands of people who called our office and other representatives to urge us to vote against this bill. The fact that this vote was so close shows that their voices were heard. And I promise them and America's workers that I will continue to fight against trade giveaways that do not improve our economy or improve the lives of our workers. So now this has gone to the Senate. I shared with you the names of the Democrats in the House who just voted to, in my opinion, betray America with fast-track authority and betray the Constitution. Here are the names of the senators who have already once voted for fast track, have already once. And, you know, I'm not prone to hyperbole. And this almost sounds like an ad hominem and a personal attack. And you know that I'm not about that. But this, in my opinion, is a genuine betrayal of democracy. Here are the senators who last time around voted yes on this. They're going to have another vote. The Senate's going to vote on this again. Mitch McConnell's going to pull this thing as fast as he can, I'm guessing, particularly if he can do it today while, you know, we're in this insane news cycle with, you got the Pope's encyclical on climate change. You've got this act of terrorism against black people going on in South Carolina with the murder of 9 people, including the brilliant pastor and state senator. Here are the senators who voted yes on fast track, the Democratic senators who voted yes on fast track last time. If one of these is one of your senators, you may want to call their office and let them know your opinion. The number for Congress is 202-225-3121. I think, Jim, you can put that up on the screen, I think, even. And their names are Bennett from Colorado, Cantwell from Washington State, Cardin from Maryland, Carper from Delaware, Coons from Delaware, Feinstein from California, Heitkamp from North Dakota, Kane from Virginia, And he's talking about running for president, right? McCaskill from Missouri. Murray from the state of Washington. Nelson from Florida. Shaheen from New Hampshire. Warner from Virginia. And Wyden from Oregon. If these 13 Democrats once again vote, and this vote may happen in 20 minutes or it might take, I mean, they've got 30 days now to do it, 40 days, something like that, until the end of July to do it. But my guess is they're either going to do it right now today and get it done with and out of the way in the middle of a news cycle that's wall to wall. If you turn on any cable news channel right now, it's all about this kid who shot up the church, right? Great time to do something under the radar. So if one of those 13 senators represents you, you may want to call them and let them know that, well, let them know whatever your opinion is. I mean, if you disagree with me and you want fast track to pass, call them and let them know that. On the other hand, if you agree with me and you know, call them and say no. Bennett, Cantwell, Cardin, Carper, Coons, Feinstein, Heitkamp, Kane, McCaskill, Murray, Nelson, Shaheen, Warner, and Wyden. You know, I want to go back to that, to Donald Trump, that clip number one. I think this, you know, I never thought I'd be quoting or playing Donald Trump for you on the radio and television. But, you know, this reminds me of Ross Perot. Ross Perot was wacky. His running mate, Admiral Stockdale, was, you know, a decorated and a heroic figure. But he was sort of past his prime. And Ross Perot on most issues was, you know, a crank, which I would say is true of Donald Trump as well. And yet Ross Perot got almost 20% of the vote running against Bill Clinton and George Herbert Walker Bush in 1992 on the one single issue of being opposed to fast track and free trade. He was the outsider going against the two insiders. And I think the people supporting the outsiders now as opposed to the insiders is, I think this is a much bigger issue now than it was in 1992, because we have now seen for, you know, two decades, nearly a decade and a half, we have seen the consequence of these free trade deals. The Korea free trade deal, our trade deficit went up. NAFTA, our trade deficit went up. Colombia South free trade deal, our deficit went up. Peru, our deficit went up. And so now we're going to do it with 90% of the world's economy between TPP and TISA or whatever, TIPP, TIPA, the one with Europe. This is insane. So anyhow, here's what Donald Trump had to say about it, and I have to say I agree with him. Here he is.
What changes would you make to try and help lift up the middle class in ways that has not been accomplished before, specifically?
The biggest thing we have to do is new trade agreements. China is killing us. Mexico is killing us. Japan is killing us. Everybody is beating us. We have incompetent people negotiating trade. We are losing money at every single step. We don't make good deals anymore.
Give us an example.
And that's why, Joe, I go out to speak. And I think Mark will tell you, although he's only about 70% there, but I will. I think you will say, I get the biggest crowds, I get right. The biggest ovations, I'm getting very good poll numbers, and nobody until yesterday thought I was running. I mean, we're doing, it's fun.
Well, actually that's what he said yesterday, but give us an example of how, because a lot of people believe it right now, especially while we're negotiating the latest trade deal, that the United States always is out negotiated on trade deals. Give me a good specific example
of that. Because China and all of these people, Mexico is the new China. By the way, Mexico is unbelievable what they're doing with cars and with industry. They are taking our business like we're a bunch of babies. We don't have our best and our brightest negotiating for us. We have a bunch of losers. We have a bunch of political hacks. We have diplomats. And China puts the people, I mean, hey, look, I know the smartest guys on Wall Street. I know our best negotiators. I know the overrated guys, the underrated guys, the guys that nobody ever heard of that are killers, that are great. We got to use those people.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to endorse Donald Trump. Don't hold your breath.
But, you know, even a broken clock is right twice a day. Rob in Mountain Iron, Minnesota. Hey, Rob, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Rob? Oh, no. I'm going to put Rob on hold. Helen in Ithaca, New York. Helen, can you hear me listening on 1470 AM?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can, yes, very, very well. And Danielle, Rob is on line 8, by the way, if you want to grab him and see what's going on with Rob. What's up, Helen?
Well, I was really disgusted when I heard you do the roll call with the votes there that Wasserman Schultz, who happens to be the head of the Democrats, voted like that. So my question was, I asked Danielle, and she said she didn't know, and I should ask you, I used to be on the Democratic committee here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was drafted. I told them, look, you don't want me. I'm too progressive. I lived in France. I'm like a socialist. You know, yes, we do. Yes, we do. So I served there for like 2-3 years, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that was like 2 years ago. So I'm not on it. But how do they choose who is going to head? Because according to Danielle, and I trust Danielle, she was a constituent of Wasserman Schultz. And she said on just about every issue, she had the opposite opinion. And I said, well, either Tom or you should be the head of the Democratic Union.
I believe that I could be wrong on this. And Congressman Bob Ney is going to be with us in the Talk Radio News Service in 5 minutes. We could ask him. But I'm pretty sure that the head of the DNC is elected by the Democratic caucus, by, you know, all the Democrats in the House and Senate. Now, I might be wrong on that. I'm not a super insider on party politics. But, you know, if you worked in the Democratic Party there in Ithaca, New York, you know that your local heads are elected. You know, it's a Democratic process. So I don't think that there's... I don't think that she's like appointed by the president, although he's arguably the head of the party himself. But it's possible. I honestly don't know the answer to your question, Helen. I'm just guessing here, which I shouldn't do, right? So, thank you very much for the call, and good on you for serving in the party for 3 months or for 3 years. That's spectacular. And thanks for listening to 1470 AM in Ithaca. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with you, your calls, my thoughts, the news of the day, and in about 5 minutes, Bob Ney with the Talk Radio News Service is going to drop in. Welcome back. Pete in Beckley, West Virginia. I was in Beckley, West Virginia recently. Pete, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. I'm glad to be talking to you. Me and my wife really love you.
Well, thank you. Beckley is where the airport is, isn't it?
Yeah, Beckley Airport.
Yeah,
over here. But
I flew in and out of that airport just a couple months ago. So anyhow, what's on your mind?
This is some very beautiful country.
It is. It's astonishingly beautiful.
We always talk about black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And what about our Native Americans? What's getting ready to happen to them out there in Apache lands there in Arizona?
Yeah, we did a show here on radio. We also did this on television.
I didn't catch that. Me and my wife, she was on the internet and she was going through and she's saying it. I've been there. If you ever been there, what a spiritual feeling you get while you're there.
I have been in that area that John McCain and Jeff Flake, the two senators from Arizona, snuck into the defense appropriation bill to give this away to a foreign mining company, a foreign copper mining company. I have been on that property with the San Carlos Apache Indians. I wrote about it in my book, The Prophet's Way. There's a chapter about it, a visit to Indian country. And I was there for a coming-of-age ceremony for a young girl who, 13, I think, is roughly when they do these ceremonies, who was the daughter of one of the people who had invited me to work there. John Rady of the Harvard Medical School and I were actually working on the reservation and, with the schools and whatnot on ADHD issues. And, well, really on over-medication issues. They were giving Ritalin to virtually every kid
in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a disaster and a tragedy that sacred spot where they have been doing these ceremonies since before white people showed up on this continent is now
10,000 years.
Pardon?
Almost 10,000 years.
Yeah, yeah, and maybe longer than that. I mean, it looks like the first occupation of North America was 20,000 years ago, 22,000 years ago.
I like it.
Yeah, so it had been Mount Sinai, had it been mm-hmm. Mecca, I don't think they would be doing it. You know, had it been a place or Jerusalem, had it been a place that was considered a holy site for Christianity, for Islam, for Judaism, or frankly, even, you know, Buddhism or Hinduism, I don't think there's any way that they would have given this property to a foreign mining company. But John McCain and Jeff Flake, the two senators from Arizona, I would love to know what kind of bribe these guys took to do this, because this is such a betrayal of Native peoples.
My take is on this: how we hear black and white, but how do we turn our nation around if we keep pushing the Native Americans around like we do? How do we get this turned around?
Yeah, well, we need to talk about it more frequently, and frankly, I need to have more Native American voices on this show too. I agree with you. I right across the board. Yeah, you know, African Americans are in a crisis and have suffered 400 years of genocide in the United States. So have Native Americans, and we need to be pointing that out more frequently. All of us, we need to be teaching it in our schools more effectively. I mean, I basically do it on Columbus Day here on the show, and I should do it far more frequently. Pete, thanks for the call, and say hi to Beckley for me. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful town. We'll be right back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. Let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service. TalkRadioNews.com, brought to you by Goats for the Old, Goat.com, and Free-Don.org. And former Congressman Bob Ney is on the line with us, the author of Sideswiped and reporter for the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Congressman, welcome.
Thank you, Tom. How are you?
I am fine, thank you. A quick question for you. Debbie Wasserman Schultz just voted for Fast Track. She is the head of the DNC. How do parties select who is the head? How did she get selected?
The what they call the titular head of the parties appoints. So President Obama technically appointed her, as you would have an appointment, you know, if you had a Republican president appointing at that time. And they call it the titular head because that was what President Obama would be. So he did appoint her.
Uh-huh.
However, you know, there's obviously a recommendation path to that type of thing.
Okay.
You know.
So enough of her peers felt that she was good and said, hey, let's go with her. And the president says, cool, we'll do that. And had there been a Republican in the White House, who would become the head of the Democratic Party?
Well, then in that case, though, then I think it punts back. That one I don't know. I think it punts back to the higher elected Democrat official. But I do know if the president's in, they do the appointment.
Right. So if
I'm not sure, Tom, though. I wouldn't want to misstate on.
Okay. You know, do the two parties do it differently? Because I know you are a Republican. Do the two
parties?
You know, does John Boehner appoint the head of the RNC?
Well, I don't know on.
Or
that.
Mitch McConnell.
I think the higher ranks have something to do with it. The higher ups. But I know if the president sits, if the sitting president is of the party, they make the appointment.
Okay,
that,
great.
That I know.
Thank you so much for informing me. So, Bob, what's going on in the world? We saw that Fast Track just passed with 28, I believe, Democrats selling us out.
Yes.
What else is up?
50 Republicans went against it. It was razor thin, 218 to 208. I mean, right on the dime.
Right.
Razor thin.
50 and Republicans voted against it. That's amazing.
50. I think if you want to really look at some corruption levels, and I've said this before publicly, and I won't be able to prove it yet, but if you want to look at it, look at after this vote, where the fundraisers come from within the Boehner side. I mean, with the president, I think he philosophically feels, you know, he wanted to do this. I don't like the trade bills, but on Boehner's side, you know, he is not famous for doing anything, to be constructive on a job. It's money, international, mega businesses, and I think you're really going to be able to follow a cash flow, frankly, and fundraising cash flows from the speaker to members, and I'll stand by that statement. It'll take a little time, but it'll come out eventually.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right. What else is going on? And we've been reporting on the I'm calling it an act of domestic terrorism. The Justice Department is investigating it as a hate crime. This 21-year-old young man, a white kid, who went into a black church and murdered 9 people, including the pastor, who is also a state senator. Anything new on that? They've caught him, right?
No, just a heinous crime. And, of course, as you said, justice is in there. The president's made a statement. The president did raise the issue beyond, obviously, the sympathy to the families and the community. He did raise the issue of guns, you know, in his statement.
Yeah, well, Fox and Friends this morning was saying, hey, if all those people in the church had just had guns, everything would have been fine.
Yeah, you hear that other side to it, but I did
crazy.
Want to mention the president mentioned that. Well, something I wanted to point out, which is amazing, Ted Cruz has now launched into his Iran mode with the Obama administration, and he's calling upon Secretary of State Kerry to release the Human Rights Report, which was technically due February 25th. Slow reports are not unusual, and the Secretary of State has to roll it out themselves. Now, I'm not saying that there's not some timing in the sense of intricate negotiations that have gone on and when the report would come out, but the fact remains Cruz's alternative is to start to cut the State Department's budget, and you're starting to see a trend, Tom, about, if the state doesn't do what they want on Hillary Clinton emails with the Benghazi committee, cut their budget. If they don't release this report, it's 5% per day to cut the budget. It's absolutely bizarre to say that you can actually penalize departments on a per-day basis.
Wow.
It simply has not happened historically in the government.
You mean all the way back to George Washington? Nobody's ever done this before?
Nobody puts in a penalty factor as if, you know, their police department, the Congress's police department, and per-day fines
right.
an agency.
That's nuts.
It just doesn't happen. You can cut budgets if you wish. If you don't think an agency's doing a job, slice the budget. But you don't build in or try legislatively. Of course, Ted Cruz yesterday, and I thought this was absolutely hilarious, when the Senate sat there and said, well, if the Supreme Court moves to take apart the health care bill, we'll just extend it for 2 years till we decide what else to do with it.
Huh.
In that private meeting, guess who said nothing? Ted Cruz.
Right.
You know, the man who would, the day after he got his hand off the Bible, would take apart Obamacare, said nothing in the private meeting, period.
Amazing. Amazing.
And so you're seeing the Senate saying, well, we will extend it for 2 years, and then we'll change a few things. The House is a little bit more aggressive, but would basically keep parts of the health care bill.
Right.
They will call it health care instead of Obamacare.
Right. Of course they will. Hey, Bob, another quick question. The fast track has now gone back to the Senate, and 13 Democrats voted for it last time, allowing it to pass. My guess was that they were going to wait until the weekend of the 4th of July to vote on this thing so it would get buried in the news cycle. But I've got MSNBC on my screen. Shano's got CNN on his. We've been watching this for the last, couple hours. There has not been, to the best of my knowledge, I mean, I'm not continuously watching it. I'm also looking at a camera and trying to do a radio show. But there has been no mention that I've noticed about the fact that Fast Track just passed the House. And so I'm thinking that Mitch McConnell's thinking, hey, I can pass this through the Senate this afternoon. When do you think the Senate will vote on it?
I think that he will attempt to vote on it quickly, if not today, tomorrow. Because when John Boehner announced he was going to take, remember, John Boehner announced just the other day that he was going to take possibly till the end of July.
Right.
And frankly, and I really hate to say this, I'm trying to be delicate, but, you know, in the political course of business, Tom, and I've heard some horrible things said when I was there, let no good emergency go unused.
Right. And we've got this
tragedy down in Charleston.
Right. And that is sucking up all the air out of the news cycle. Or the corporate media just doesn't want to talk about, a giant corporate victory. Bob Ney, Congressman, thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thank you.
is the Tom Hartman Program.
Former classmate told the Daily Beast that he didn't think Roof was a racist so much as a conservative with a lot of Southern pride. All right, there's a nice summary over at TPM of everything we know right now about Jason Storm Roof. My question is, where did the storm come from? Stormfront.org is the white supremacist website and community. Is that what this kid is named after? I don't know. I'm just curious. Next Thursday, I think it is. There's a piece on Think Progress about this, actually. Yeah. Did Ian Millhiser write this? Yes, he did. Ian Millhiser. He said, 2 years ago next Thursday, Chief Justice John Roberts walked into the Supreme Courtroom, took his seat in the court's center chair, and then, after waiting for his colleagues to dispose of some less closely watched business, began to tell a fairy tale about a nation redeemed. This is what John Roberts said, the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. He said, voting discrimination against African Americans was so entrenched and pervasive in 1965 that, to cite just one example, less than 7% of African Americans of voting age in Mississippi had been able to register to vote. But then, Roberts told the courtroom, America set aside this past. There are examples of progress, quoting Roberts here, more poignant than the numbers. During the Freedom Summer of 64 in Philadelphia, Mississippi, three men were murdered while working in the area to register African-American voters. On Bloody Sunday in Selma, Alabama in 1965, police beat and used tear gas on hundreds marching in support of enfranchising of African-Americans. Today, both Philadelphia and Mississippi and Selma, Alabama have African-American mayors. Our country has changed. And thus, in Shelby County v. Holder, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court struck and four of his right-wing buddies gutted the Civil Rights Act of 1960, or the Voting Rights Act, excuse me, of 1964 or 5, yeah. And here we have, yeah, we're a post-racial society, Roberts. We really are, aren't we? This is nuts. Whew. And I haven't even gotten to the Pope yet. The Pope has come out and said some just extraordinary things in this encyclical, that, you know, the rich nations of the world have an obligation to the poor nations of the world, that we've basically been ripping them off by stealing their natural resources. It's time for us to pay them back for the environmental damage that we've done to them. That global climate change is real and it threatens the entire planet. His science advisor said that climate change will happen, and it will happen suddenly and dramatically and in a way that nobody expects. He said it'll be, you know, like dying. Like he used the analogy of a patient with a fever, and suddenly the fever hits a point where the patient just croaks. I'm paraphrasing here. It's amazing. And Jeb Bush is like, well, you know, I don't get my science from my Pope. It's, I don't get my politics from my Pope. Yeah, right. Tell that to Terry Schiavo's husband. Anita in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Anita, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am well. What's up?
Okay. I want to talk about what happened in South Carolina, but I'm not surprised with these people that scream they want to take their country back. And look at South Carolina itself. What is over the Capitol building? What flies over the Capitol building of South Carolina?
The Confederate battle flag, the stars and bars.
Confederate flag. Exactly.
It's not actually the Confederate flag. That's not the flag of the Confederacy. That's the flag of the military of the Confederacy, which is even worse, frankly. Back to you.
So I'm not surprised by this. This kind of stuff, it's been, you know, brewing. I'm not shocked by it at all. It frightens me. I'm afraid. I don't know what these people are kind of like in the last throes, you know, these handful of people who want to hold on to this white privilege.
Yeah.
And it's scaring them. And I think President Obama is a symbol of that to them.
You know, I have.
Because they've always been.
Oh, yeah. The election of a black man as president is making these people crazy. And I have referred to Fox News as the official voice. I used to refer to them as the official voice of the Republican Party. I mean, that's how Roger Ailes envisioned it back when he pitched it to Richard Nixon when he was working in the Nixon White House. But more recently, I've been referring to Fox so-called news as the official voice of the Confederate States of America. And if you go over to MediaMatters.org, top headline. Fox News host, it's extraordinary that Charleston church shooting is being called a hate crime. While police in Charleston classify the attack as a hate crime, Fox News host Steve Ducey wondered if it was part of a war on Christians. And then the other headline is Fox and Friends exploits South Carolina church shooting to call for more guns. I think the Confederate States of America are alive and well. I think they've got their own television network. It's called Fox News. And it's a challenging time, shall we say, for America.
How they're going to keep that up? I saw that too about them blaming it on you know, a war on Christian or Christianity.
Yeah.
But I don't know how they're going to keep that up. But this guy said he was going to kill black people.
Right.
And he said to that woman, "I'm, you know, I have to do this. You're raping our women. You know, you have to go."
Let me play the clip for you. This is the cousin of the pastor who was murdered, speaking to NBC News.
He just said, "I have to do it." He said, "You rape our women and you're taking over our country and you have to go."
There you go. Back to you, Anita.
Yeah, I don't know what it is with this rape thing. Donald Trump with his, they're rapists.
Right.
It's something to do.
Conservatives are obsessed with sex.
Right.
That's why they want to get inside women's uteruses and control what's going on there. It's why they want to forbid us from having sex education classes. That's why, you know, I mean, it's just conservatives are obsessed with sex. So they're locked up, uptight, repressed, bizarre people.
Well, women to them are property.
Oh yeah, I mean, look at every single one of the guys who was prosecuting Bill Clinton for getting it on with Monica Lewinsky was having an affair at the time.
Right, it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Welcome to the Republican Party, Anita. Thank you very much for the call. It's great. It's always great to hear from you, Jeannie in Rimrock, Arizona. Hey, Jeannie, what's up? Jeannie, can you hear me? She apparently cannot. Let's try Charles in Opa-locka, Florida. Hey, Charles, can you hear me? Charles? These are people who have been on hold for a while. I think maybe that's our problem. Eric in Darlington, Pennsylvania. Charles is on line 10. Eric, can you hear me?
Yes, Tom, I can.
Bless you. What's on your mind?
Hey, I also appreciate Donald Trump's populist rhetoric. I think it's good to hear it from another voice other than Bernie.
Yeah.
And he's an entertaining person. And I have to admit, born and raised Democrat, I'm voting for Bernie. I want to thank Bernie for not making me switch parties here in Pennsylvania to vote for him. But he's got my vote. And I will support Hillary if that's the Democratic choice.
Yeah, I think this is the only reasonable thing, particularly given that you've got four Supreme Court seats coming up in the next presidency.
Well, that's my exact point about Donald Trump. I think he's amusing, but I thought, oh, my God, if Donald Trump has to pick one Supreme Court justice, who?
He's going to pick the head of the business roundtable. He's going to pick the richest fat cat he can find.
Well, and then when he's talking about our politicians are terrible negotiators, and we're getting our asses kicked.
Right. And then he said he would bring in Jack Welch as a negotiator. Jack Welch ran GE. Jack Welch is the guy who said, if I could put a factory on a barge and just move it from country to country, wherever the cheapest labor is, I'd do it. It's like, whoa, my head is exploding. Pardon my interrupting you, Eric.
Politicians aren't negotiating for us.
There you go.
For the international corporation.
You're right. You're right. And Donald Trump would, frankly, I think, make it worse. Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
That said, because Trump's rhetoric is resonating with the Republican base, it tells us all this is a populist moment. People are waking up. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And I did want to just make one quick note. And, oh, there it is. I mentioned Jason McCain, who passed away, who worked at Free Speech TV. And the whole, I mean, Free Speech TV is a small, it's like a family. It's a small group of people in Denver, and they're all in mourning. I mean, this is just hitting everybody really hard. And so if you're responding to the Free Speech TV fund drive and you would like to make a contribution of any amount in Jason's name, I'm sure that would be appreciated. Just an FYI. So, with that said, Flo in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hey, Flo, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. A couple of things. I remember during the Bush years when he was president, we used to call that weapons of mass distraction. You said if the Senate tries to vote on this fast-track authority,
yeah.
We used to call that weapons of mass distraction. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I hope, I don't know if we're having it now.
I think but, we are. I think we are. I think that, you know, I agree with Bob Ney that Mitch McConnell is going to try to use the big stories in the news cycle, the Pope, the murder in South Carolina, as a way to get fast track passed through the Senate. We'll see.
That's really disgusting. Jeb Bush canceled a campaign stop. It, was it South Carolina or North Carolina? He was supposed to go there, and he canceled it
right. Because
of what happened. But I think they should have put the question to him, do you believe in gun control? And that would have been just the right place to do it after what happened there.
Yeah. Yeah, this kid was apparently given this gun. It was a 45. I mean, 45s are big. That's a big caliber bullet. You get hit with a 45, you're dead. And his father apparently gave it to him for his birthday, for his 21st birthday.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Tom, one more thing. It doesn't seem right to me, though. CBS reported a little while ago our first quarter trade deficit was $113 billion.
Wow.
But March, it was 51. April, it was 40. That seems to me a little bit low.
It might be low because of the way that international currencies have been swinging so much recently. It's probably been altering international trade. And it also might be low. In fact, I'll bet, I'm almost certain it's low because the price of oil is low right now. And, you know, we import oil. The imported oil makes up some of our trade deficit. But still, for every $1 billion in trade deficit, you've got 17,000 lost American jobs.
Oh, that's great. They said it was mainly because of our low exporting.
Yeah.
Big trade deficit.
Well, it's either low exports or high imports, you know, one or the other. So it's two sides of the same thing. But I'm guessing that, you know, we didn't used to run trade deficits. America had a trade surplus from the time we were created as a country, from the George Washington administration until the Reagan administration. We had a trade surplus. We were the world's largest creditor when Reagan came into office. And by the time Reagan left office 8 years later, we had our first trade deficit. And it's gotten worse and worse and worse to the point that it's now a cumulative trade deficit of $11 trillion. Our GDP is only $15 trillion. This is the deficit that actually counts. This is the one that actually matters. Our budget deficit is, you know, and debt is not that big a deal. But our trade, we're running a trade deficit of around $500 billion a year. But the total trade debt is $11 trillion. It's amazing. Flo, thank you for the call. We'll be back. Minutes past the hour. Tom Harbin here with you, your media support group for We the People, helping you win the water cooler wars, at least on most days. We didn't win, well, it's not the water cooler war. We didn't win in the House today because 28 Democrats sold us down the river. 50 Republicans voted no on fast track, on TPA. It's going to be interesting to see what happens in the Senate now. Ryan in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hey, Ryan, welcome to the program. What's up?
Hello there. I didn't hear the first part of the entire list of representatives that voted against that, but my concern is both last week and this week, I called the office of my personal representative, who happens to be Lois Frankel, and apparently her staff is instructed not to report to constituents the way she voted. Last week, I had to find out how she voted by going to some obscure office in Congress who looked her vote up for me. And she did, in fact, vote no against both of the measures at that time.
Yeah, that's what I'm showing here, too.
Today. And even they thought it was strange. And I did the same thing again, and I got the same spiel. And I'm really outraged as to the sort of elitist attitude that our representatives are getting, whether they're Democrats or Republicans. They don't think they work for us, and in practical terms, they don't. They work for the big multinationals and the big investment houses.
Right, and you can thank the Supreme Court for that, by the way.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I did take your advice, and I am going to the executive committee meeting of the Democratic Party next month. And I did find out who my local precinct captains are, and I'm going to see what they're about and maybe stand against them if their politics don't agree with mine, maybe more than that.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to share that, just this sort of arrogance that the certain members of Congress are getting towards their constituents.
Yeah, I'm with you. And good on you, Ryan. That's the kind of activism that actually ends up changing party politics, you know, the kind of stuff that you're doing. And I absolutely salute you for that. Thank you so much for the call. Paul in Woodinville, Washington, listening to KBCS. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I have to say I did give my representative, Susan Delbeni, a call and an earful about voting, being one of the 28 to vote for Fast Track.
Was she?
I'm sorry?
Oh, yeah, she was. Delbeni, yeah.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Holy
and,
cow.
Tying into my comments today about Social Security, if you remember last March, I gave a held a forum about Social Security at the local library here, and when I got to the part of my talk where I was going through basic civics about who our local, state, and local representatives are, and who our representatives in Congress are, and I got to the name Susan Delbeni, I got about a third of the room booing, boos.
Wow.
And I said, well, what's that for? What's right. that for? And they said, corporatist. She's a corporatist. I told them that story today when I called up.
Huh.
I said, so that's how you're being perceived as a corporatist.
Right.
So the
challenge now, Paul, is who is going to be the person that you and your colleagues in Susan Delbeni's district are going to put forward as a primary challenger to her. In the primaries that are coming up whenever Washington State holds them, is it even too late? Because, you know, there's a primary and then there's the general election next November. Do you know?
Maybe me.
I would support you.
I mean, somebody's got to stand up. And I said, I would consider a primary challenger for certain. There are several people who I know would be interested in that position, who have run before, who challenged her before. So, but they may be back, you know, get back into it.
I think if she had a primary challenger and the challenger's ads were basically just limited to this is the person who voted for Fast Track for more of these god awful trade deals, that challenger would probably not have a hard time taking that seat. If it's a safe Democratic district, that challenger would probably end up in the U.S. House of Representatives.
I think so. And I want to characterize this as one of these grand bargains. This is the new politics of grand bargains, and I'm going to go to Social Security. And Neil McCabe's comments yesterday about privatizing Social Security.
Right.
He said that this is a huge amount of capital that's not being used. Well, first of all, that's false. The capital in the Social Security Trust Fund has been used. It has been used already. The Social Security Trust Fund is part of is a creditor of the national debt.
Right.
So it's been used on behalf of the American people to do, well, various things like fund the Iraq War. So it's not been used well.
Right.
But then he said people would be surprised if they knew how underperforming the Social Security Trust Fund was. And you correctly said it's not supposed to be about performance like it's stock securities. As a matter of fact, when the Social Security when Social Security first came in, they considered how will it be funded, and the decision having the market just the stock market having just crashed 6 years before that it would not be funded by high risky stock securities, that Treasury bonds are the only way to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and that decision, by the way, was recertified in 1983 by Ronald Reagan.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. And the other thing is that this is the lie that takes up. Oh, this isn't performing. How do you think a stock? How do you think a market that's constantly being sold off 20% each time that you got to pay retirement funds? How are stocks going to perform when they're being sold off all the time?
There you go. Yeah, you're right. And as demographic changes, it's swinging the stock market. Paul, thank you so much for the call. And keep us up to date on what happens with Susan Delpenny. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
28 minutes past the hour. Our trade surplus remains strong. Say what? We'll be back. Occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you. And Alex in Cambridge, New York, it says, you want to disagree with me about tariffs and trade because our trade surplus remains strong. Are you serious?
Mm-hmm. Well, here's what I'll have to say. So I did want to disagree with some of the stats you stated. You noted that tariffs were an average of 30% until Reagan. But FDR, after the Great Depression, passed the Reciprocal Trade Agreement, which was similar to TPA, and this allowed the president to expand and negotiate free trade agreements. And after this was passed, tariffs dropped, and our surplus from that time until Reagan remained strong, even though we...
Oh, our trade surplus was very strong, but our average tariffs were certainly above 20% during that time anyway.
Well, some of the data I saw, it dropped into the under 10 during that time.
Well, even a 10% tariff, Alex, I would take right now.
Okay, well, we'll disagree with about that.
What's there to disagree with? I mean, we've got tariffs right now that are averaging around 1.2%. And with a 1.2% tariff, when you match that against an 18% VAT tax that Germany and Japan are throwing at us, where everything that we export into Japan or Germany, they have to pay, you know, the Japanese consumers or German consumers have to pay an 18% VAT tax on it. You know, that's effectively an 18% import tariff. And whereas if Germany or Japan want to import things into the United States, depending on the product, but, you know, typically the tariff is between 0 and 2%. How is that rational? How does that make any sense? That's why we have an $11 trillion trade debt, and we're running a $100 billion trade deficit just for the first 3 months of this year. That's not a good thing. You know, every $1 billion in trade deficit that you've got 17,000 jobs that are lost. We're talking millions of jobs, of American jobs, that have been lost as a consequence of this.
Well, if we raise tariffs, and I did read your book, Rebooting the American Dream. So if China's making it worth a shoe worth of 20 cents of labor, where the U.S. makes it worth of a dollar of labor, and we put an 80-cent tariff on it, what if China raises their tariffs in retaliation on us? I mean,
no problem.
Is that just going to create conflict?
No, I think China should. I mean, China actually already has tariffs. If you try to import an automobile, right, for example, out of the United States into China right now, the tariff is 22% on the import. You will not see a lot of American cars driving around in China. But someday soon, you're going to see Chinese cars coming here. And in fact, if you buy a Chevy right now, you're buying an engine block that was made in China. So let them put tariffs up. I think that every country should have tariffs. And they should selectively look at, and this is what Alexander Hamilton laid out, and if you read Rebooting the American Dream, you know this, because I reprinted Hamilton's actual letter to Congress saying, here's my 11-point plan, laying it out. You know that Alexander Hamilton said, you know, we don't want to put tariffs on things that are not necessary American industries. On the other hand, those industries that we feel we want to keep in the United States, we absolutely put tariffs on those imports, and every country in the world should be doing the exact same thing. This is what Adam Smith wrote about in Wealth of Nations. The example, as I recall, it's been a lot of years since I read it, but the example, as I recall, was Ireland, England, and France. He didn't name the countries, but I think that's what he suggested. You got one country that makes good wine, you got another country that makes great cheese, and you got another country that makes great something else, bread, let's say. And as long as all three of them are specializing in those three things, they should have low tariffs on those three things. And that way, the third one wasn't bread; it was wool. You know, they had a lot of sheep in England or Ireland. I forget which it was. And so, you know, that way everybody can wear a nice warm sweater and eat their cheese and drink their wine, right? But if two countries are both making cheese, then it becomes incumbent upon those two countries to start putting up tariffs against each other's cheese to protect their domestic industries. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, I see a thesis now to increase trade, what you were getting at.
Yeah, so I think every country in the world should raise tariffs, and this is, by the way, how it was at the time of FDR's presidency. And yes, you're right, there was a strain in the Democratic Party as well as the Republican Party who thought that we should be adjusting tariffs downward, and mostly in the Democratic Party, oddly enough. They were the free traders. The Republicans are opposed to that. The Republicans pushed through Smoot-Hawley. That was during the Hoover administration in 1930 or 31. And Smoot-Hawley really didn't have anything to do with the Great Depression. It just, you know, it was a slight, very slight increase in our tariffs. But every country should start out with, say, a tariff rate of 30% and then say, okay, you know, do we really want to keep carved sandalwood from Thailand out of the United States? There's no carved sandalwood industry in the United States. So we'll make that tariff zero. On the other hand, you know, steel, we really should be making steel in the United States. I mean, if we ever have to defend ourselves like in World War II again, we need steel. And so we should maintain a tariff on steel. We want to, you know, what are the industries that produce good jobs? What are our critical industries? If you go over to Economy in Crisis, there's a brilliant article there, economyincrisis.com, I'm pretty sure it is, might be .org, but the website, new article about how we are losing 14 factories a day on average in the United States right now. And the author of the article, I think his name was Thomas Heffer, he goes through a list of critical things that we no longer make in the United States that are like critical for our national defense. And I don't have it in front of me right now. I could probably pull it up fairly quickly. And it's like we're being stupid in our trade policies. And most of these other countries that are signing these deals are also being stupid because they're not acting in the interests of their nations. They're acting in the interests of the transnational corporations who have bought and control their politicians. Most of these countries are so much more corrupt than the United States. And we're pretty damn corrupt, you know, given everything that the Supreme Court has done, but they're so corrupt that they're not making decisions in their national interest. Every country should. I think every country should have a protectionist trade policy, and they should selectively decide what are the things that we want to have free trade in or low tariff trade in, and what are the things that we really, really, really want to keep as a domestic industry. I think we should be making clothes in this country. This was John Edwards' campaign, right, about the textile mills where he came from South Carolina or North Carolina, wherever it was, one of the Carolinas, and they used to make socks. You know, they had just miles of textile mills, and they made socks and underwear where John Edwards grew up. And he was like, we don't make that anywhere in the United States anymore. And those provided good jobs for people. And instead, now you've got people who are living on welfare. That's crazy. You know, as Franklin Roosevelt said, the best welfare program is a job. And how do you get the jobs? You get them by managing your trade. Every time somebody buys something from Walmart or pretty much anywhere else now, because pretty much everything is made in China that we're selling in the United States or made in a low wage country. Every time they do that, they're diminishing the employment base in the United States. And eventually more and more people are unemployed. They're not contributing to the economy. They're sucking from the economy. They're increasing the U.S. budget deficit because we're supporting them with unemployment payments and food stamps and housing assistance and all this kind of stuff. It's ruining their lives. It's tearing their families apart. And it's hitting minorities worse than it's hitting white people, but it's hitting everybody. And am I making sense, Alex?
Yeah, you fixed some of my doubts on protectionism.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much. I appreciate the call. Dave in Scotia, New York. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to touch real quick on the shooting of South Carolina and Fox News' coverage of it, if you want to call it coverage. I mean, the people are a joke anyways. But one thing I've noticed, and maybe you can correct me on it, maybe I've missed something, I've looked around on their homepage, and I've looked around a couple of different places on the Internet. I have not once heard anybody on that network refer to this as an act of domestic terrorism. Yet, wasn't it not too long ago when they were condemning Obama at a national prayer breakfast for not using the term Islamic terrorists? I mean, the hypocrisy is unbelievable.
Yeah, I agree. And there's good coverage of what's going on at Fox over at MediaMatters.org. But frankly, Dave, none of the networks are calling this domestic terrorism. because terrorism against black people in the United States has been happening so long that white people, white-owned networks, white commentators don't even think of it as terrorism. They you know, I think well-intentioned people don't think about it, and not so well-intentioned people don't want to talk about it. But it is domestic terrorism. White people have been terrorizing black people in North America for 400 years, and it's time to stop. It's time to put a stop to it. Dave, thank you for the call. Bobby in Long Island, got a minute. Bobby, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Tom, do you? I think I heard that Bernie is in favor of guns. And if that's true, do you know the reason why?
Bernie was asked this question a couple of weeks ago, and I can't speak for him, but this is my recollection of what he said. Vermont has very lax gun laws. You can basically just walk into any gun store in Vermont and buy any gun you want and walk out and stick it in your pants, and you're just fine. I lived there for 10 years. They maybe have changed the laws since then, but I don't think so. He represents Vermont. His point was that every state and every municipality should be able to make their own gun laws, that New York City has, you know, for good reason, has very different gun laws than Vermont does. And so, you know, that earns him some brownie points with some of the NRA people who think that there shouldn't be federal gun control laws, although I think that he is in favor of some rational gun control at the federal level, things like, you know, the assault weapons ban and stuff like that. But I can't speak for Bernie. I don't remember the exact details of his position on it. But if you go to BernieSanders.com, I'm guessing that you will find it there, because he has basically all his positions on all the issues listed. Bobby, thank you for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
The other thing about Vermont is that, you know, probably half the state, well, not half the state, but maybe 15 or 20% of the state, you know, of the families in that state go hunting. Welcome back. Norma in Montgomery, Alabama, watching on Free Speech TV. Hey, Norma, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking me.
Sure.
I was wondering, in your opinion, as a, what I consider an educated person, if these people that are supposedly representing us do something that essentially violates the first paragraph of the Constitution, the opening paragraph,
mm-hmm.
which says, you know, they're supposed to promote the general welfare and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our prosperity. If they keep doing things that interfere with the legal intent, the legal outline of the Constitution, can we people who live in these different states impeach our representatives? And if so, how can we figure out a way to do it? Who do we ask?
It's the way that you impeach your representatives, Norma, is laid out in the Constitution, and it's called elections. And the good news is that, at least with the House of Representatives, every 2 years, every single member of the House is up for reelection. And that's the body that is supposed to be closest to the people. And it is, because every 2 years they're up for reelection. Now, they've kind of gotten away from being close to the people through gerrymandering by creating districts that are safe Republican districts and safe Democratic districts. And they kind of wink nod at each other and say, okay, this is how we're going to do it. But still, that's how you do it, is with elections. And because of gerrymandering, now most of the action is in the primaries, not in the general elections. And very few people vote in the primaries. Very few people pay attention to the primaries. And that's why, Norma, if you want to be a political activist within your party, participate in the primary process. Get inside the party. Help nominate the people who are going to run in the primary. This is what the Tea Party guys did back in 2010, and it's how, you know, they have such an outsized influence in the Republican Party. Make sense?
Well, I tried hard last year to do that, and I'm represented by Martha Roby, which, in my personal opinion, means I have no representation. I watched at the photo ops in January after the elections, and I watched her peck Boehner on the cheek, and so I figure, that's a lost cause there. And I tried hard to get someone elected in my state house here. But we had such a low voter turnout, and I consistently run into people who say they don't want to get involved in politics. And I'm having a hard time teaching people that politics is a smoke.
Well, Roby is a Republican.
Yes, I know.
Oh, okay.
We tried hard to get someone else elected, and we lost.
Right.
And then here in the state house, we tried to get a Democrat elected, and we lost again. And it's always the same machine that we're going up against. And I can't get enough people to understand that we are at probably the most dangerous time in the history of the United States. Yeah. That if we don't take our government back, we are losing for an extremely long period of
time. See, here's, and you're in Montgomery, Alabama. I'm of the opinion, and I think Senator Sanders is as well, although again I can't speak for him, that if the Democrats in these quote red states would stop trying to behave like Republicans and start behaving like real progressives, start behaving yeah. like, you know, FDR Democrats, that they would start taking these seats away from Republicans.
Well, I think, too, that people in Montgomery are in for a shock in August. We have a mayor's election on August the 25th. And because of white flight, we have a little town called the City of Pike Road, which is where the rich white people live. And they can no longer vote in our mayoral election.
Well, that's
so we have a chance.
So there's a chance. Very interesting. Norma, good luck. Thanks for the call. And thanks for raising a really important issue. 10 minutes before the hour. We'll be right back. Exposing the con in conservative. Tom Hartman here with you. Richard in Los Alamitos, California. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Hello, Mr. Hartman. You are certainly a national treasure.
Thank you, sir.
And I just wanted to mention that I haven't heard the news or any of the reports calling this criminal a thug. They talk about the young man involved in the shooting and the young man this. Why do you think that is?
Because thug's the new N-word. It's the acceptable N-word that white people use on television and radio.
I guess that was kind of a rhetorical question.
Yeah, it was. I figured. But, you know, I mean, here's the sad thing, Richard. If you were to ask that question of most people, I think in most white people in America, they wouldn't know the answer.
Well, let me tell you what happened to me this morning. I work at a company in Irvine, California. It's kind of like a white enclave here in Orange County. And a person went by my desk and said, "Oh, my God, did you hear about the shooting in South Carolina last night?" And she was white. And I said, "Yeah." I said, "That guy was a thug." And she said, "Oh, no, he wasn't black."
Honest to God?
Honest to God.
This is a white woman who said this?
Yes. And
yeah.
I said, "Well, wait a minute. Are there only black thugs?"
Yeah. Well,
and then she had like a blank look on her face and just kind of just walked away. I'm like, "Oh, my God."
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Richard, thanks for the call. It's a really, really good question, and you know, if anybody has any interaction with the news media, if you can figure out a way to get a message to any of these folks in any of the networks. Oh, really? Oh, Shano is printing out an op-ed that's in the Washington Post right now where they actually called this guy a thug. So, okay. Richard, thanks a lot for the call. Dane in Olympia, Washington. Hey, Dane, you called your senators?
Oh, hey, Tom. I just thought I'd mention there was some stuff about Susan DelBene earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Several years ago, before they did the redistricting, I was in the district where she was running against Dave Reichert. And I actually even did some phone banking for her to try to help her get elected. I thought she would be better than Dave Reichert, but I'm really disappointed now.
Well, I think broadly speaking, she is better than Dave Reichert. This is
I was hoping maybe Darcy Berner would try to run against her again next time.
Oh, that would be interesting. Yeah, this is the thing. We need to get some actual progressives in Congress. We really, really do.
I called both of my senators and told them I was hoping they'd switch their vote because they both sold us out last time on this too.
Yeah, so. I'm with you. Thank you very much for the call, Dane. Danielle just handed me this op-ed in today's Washington Post. Shooters of color are called terrorists and thugs. Why are white shooters called mentally ill? This racist media narrative around mass violence falls apart with the Charleston church shooting. It's by Anthea Butler, an associate professor of religion and Africana studies at the University of Pennsylvania. So start on paragraph 2. Okay, she says, but listen to major media outlets and you won't hear the word terrorism used in coverage of Tuesday's shootings. You won't hear the white male shooter identified as 21-year-old Dylan Roof described as a possible terrorist. And if coverage of recent shootings by white suspects is any indication, he never will be. Instead, the go-to explanation for his actions will be mental illness. He will be humanized and called sick, a victim of mistreatment or inadequate mental health resources. Activist DeRay McKesson noted this morning that while discussing Roof's motivations, an MSNBC anchor said, "We don't know his mental condition." That, she says, is the power of whiteness in America. That, bingo, yeah, white privilege. Amazing. Jeff in Denver. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hey, greetings from the land of the con Dems, Michael Bennett and Jared Polis, who we hope will be primaried. And
there you go.
Away. Anyway, want to show how the chain of events, cause and defect, as I say, where we can hatch a few birds with one egg. So we've got we've got a whole bunch of problems: GMOs, energy, water, dams, global warming, farm subsidies, energy subsidies, taxes, butterflies, bees, water, land pollution, wildlife habitat. That can be dramatically improved by dealing with one issue: stop throwing away food.
Yeah.
In the U.S., you know, we throw away about 40% of our food.
Yeah.
And why do they say we need GMOs to grow more food? Well, we don't. We throw away 40%.
Right.
In states like Colorado, over 90, I think it's like 93 or 97% of the water is used for food. California.
Have you eaten in a restaurant recently, Jeff?
Actually, yes.
You know what continuously astonishes me, because I, you know, living here in D.C. For work and for pleasure, we eat out a fair amount. And the portions, I mean, Louise and I just have for years now been in the habit of ordering one entree, and we split it, and it's still too much food.
Yeah.
And I'll bet you that most of that waste, that 40% of food that's wasted, that's thrown away, is not from people cooking dinner at home. It's from restaurants.
Yeah, and then you consider that it had to be transported, it had to be cooked, the energy used to cook it, it had to be refrigerated.
Right.
Food is one of the biggest users of fossil fuels.
Yep.
So we could have a 30% reduction in water usage. We could have, 20% reduction of fossil fuels and things like that. I mean, then we've got the butter, we're losing land. We don't have the hedgerows anymore for the milkweed, for the butterflies and such.
Right.
Well, we could turn a lot of land back into wild land by just stopping throwing away food.
Yeah.
The reason we have dams is for all the...
I wonder if there should be, whether it should be legislatively done or whether it should be some kind of shaming campaign to try to get restaurants. I know there was a brief period where, Nouvelle Cuisine, small dishes were very in for a while, but then it became kind of a joke and it went away. That was maybe a decade ago. But just to start telling restaurants, stop serving obesity-sized portions. And, if somebody wants to eat that much food, let them order two entrees instead of one.
Went to Mangiano's Little Italy, and it was so obscene, their portions. It was just incredible.
Yeah.
But it's also grocery stores not selling. They want produce to look perfect.
Right.
There's a Canadian grocery chain now that is actually selling less perfect.
Buy the apples with the blemishes on them. They're probably healthier. They had fewer pesticides sprayed on them. The wilted lettuce, if it's not badly wilted, is still pretty nutritious stuff. Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. Thank you all for everything today. Thank you so much for being with us. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires you. The fast track is now with the Senate. 202-225-3121 is the number for the Capitol switchboard. Tell them what state you live in. They'll put you through to your senators. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.